Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents J.A. Johnstone's The Loner, narrated by Ken Jackson, with performances by Eric Messner, Michael Glenn, Yasmin Toison, Tim Getman, Gary Tells, Jeff Allen, Karen Novak, Thomas Penny, Bradley Smith, Tim Carlin, Evan Casey, Christopher Graybill, Lily Beacon, Alexander Strain, Patrick Bussink, Scott McCormick, Thomas Keegan, Nanette Savard, James Lewis, Dylan Lynch, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, James Konacek, Daniel Sontag, Christopher Sheeran, and Mort Shelby. The Loner, Book 9, Killer Poker. Conrad Browning knew he was asleep. That didn't make the dream he was having any less of a nightmare. In the dream, two laughing children looked at him. He could see they had no faces. Where happy smiles and bright eyes should have been, he saw only smooth, empty, hideously blank flesh. He came up out of sleep. Cold sweat beaded on his face.
Sir! Mr. Browning, are you all right?
Arturo's familiar voice grounded Conrad and gave him something to hang on to.
Yes, Arturo. It was just a bad dream.
I surmised as much, sir.
Conrad's pulse wasn't racing quite so crazily, but a feeling of revulsion still gripped him. A holstered Colt, with the attached shell belt wrapped around it, lay on the ground beside his bedroll. He was glad that instinct hadn't made him grab the gun when the nightmare jolted him out of his sleep. He might have fired it without meaning to and hurt Arturo. The servant was sitting on a fallen cottonwood with a Winchester across his knees. A few feet away, the little creek where they had made camp gurgled along. A million stars shone in the black sky above them. It should have been a peaceful night. But Conrad Browning was anything but at peace. He ran his fingers through his close-cropped, sandy hair, then wiped the clammy beads off his face. He tried to tell himself he was sweating because the night was warm, but he knew that wasn't true. And just because he was awake didn't mean the nightmare was over.
Is there anything I can do for you?
Conrad shook his head. He pushed the tangled bedroll aside and stood up.
I'm awake, so I might as well go ahead and take over standing guard.
It's still more than an hour until I was supposed to wake you.
Yeah, but like I said, I'm awake.
Conrad held out his hand for the rifle.
And this is a chance for you to get a little extra sleep.
Well...
Arturo considered the idea for a moment, then handed the Winchester to Conrad.
All right. I am a bit weary. Thank you, sir.
No thanks necessary.
Arturo stood up and stretched. Technically, Arturo was Conrad's butler, valet, and traveling companion on their quest. But they were more like brothers in arms, having faced deadly danger together on numerous occasions. The campfire had burned down to embers. Conrad didn't bother stirring it up before he took Arturo's place on the log. Cottonwoods that were upright and healthy lined the creek banks. Conrad sat and listened intently while Arturo stretched out to sleep. The horses were picketed nearby. Conrad frowned as the animals began to shift around. Something had spooked them. A coyote, maybe? Or even a wolf? He didn't know what dangers might lurk on the plains of eastern Colorado. Something was out there. His instincts told him that much, and he had learned to trust them.
Hello to camp!
Yeah.
Arturo sat up and reached for the pistol next to his bedroll. Conrad came to his feet. There was no reason to think they were about to have trouble, but there was also no reason not to be careful. Conrad heard the sound of several horses approaching the camp.
That's far enough! What do you want?
We were riding by not far off, heard somebody yell out. Everything all right, friend?
Conrad's mouth tightened. It bothered him that somebody had heard his horrified cry.
Yes, we're fine. But thank you for your concern.
Wouldn't happen to have some coffee left in that pot, would you? We've been riding all night.
Though he hadn't been raised in the West, it was where Conrad made his home. And Western hospitality demanded that visitors be welcomed.
Come on in!
Arturo, stir the fire up. And keep your pistol handy, just in case.
Three dark shapes bulked up out of the night, turning into three men on horseback as they came closer. Conrad didn't point the Winchester at them, but he kept the rifle aimed in their general direction. Little flames began to dance as Arturo stirred the campfire back to life. The light they cast showed three hard-faced, unshaven men who looked tired as they reined their lathered mounts to a halt. They had been riding hard and fast.
All right, the lighting's set.
Go ahead. Any coffee left in the pot, Arturo?
Some. I'm not sure it's fit to drink by this point, however.
The man who seemed to be the leader of the trio grinned as he swung down from the saddle.
Well, it'll do fine by us. We're much obliged.
Just because they looked like hard cases didn't mean they were, Conrad thought. They could be drifting cowhands, or even ranchers. There were some vast spreads on the Colorado plains, and some cattle barons didn't believe in putting on airs. On the other hand, they could just as easily be owl hoots on the run from the law. Considering the low-slung guns they wore, that was probably more likely. Arturo set the coffee pot at the edge of the fire.
We should let that warm up a bit. That can only improve what's left.
One of the strangers took the reins of the horse from the other two men, leaving them with both hands free. Conrad made a note of that fact. He knew the leader was studying him and Arturo. The man didn't seem too impressed with what he saw. Arturo wasn't the least bit threatening in his appearance, and Conrad was just a young man, fairly tall and well-built, but in nondescript black trousers and a white shirt open at the throat. He wasn't anything special. The man looked over at their horses. The big, blaze-faced black gelding Conrad rode was a fine animal, and the four horses making up the team that pulled Arturo's buckboard were pretty good, too. The pack mule didn't really count.
You know, if you fellows are interested, maybe we could work a trade.
What sort of trade?
Our horses are about played out. We really need to keep moving as soon as we've had our cup of coffee. How about we swap you our mounts for three of your animals?
Sorry, we're used to these animals. We'd like to keep them.
Anger flashed in the man's eyes, but he kept a grin on his face. He looked at Arturo.
Huh. Was that the way you feel about it, amigo?
Whatever Mr. Browning says is fine with me.
Oh, your boss, is he?
My employer.
That's none of your business.
The man held up his left hand, palm out.
Oh, now, no offense meant, friend. I'm just making conversation. You sure we can't interest you in swapping horses?
I'm certain.
The man who wasn't holding the horses spoke up.
Ah, hell, Kinks, am I all this pussyfooting around?
Now take it easy. How's that coffee coming along, Arturo?
It should be getting warm now.
Using a piece of thick leather to protect his hand, Arturo grasped the pot's handle and picked it up.
If you have cups...
Now, just hold on, hold on. We need to finish our business first.
We don't have any business to finish. Drink your coffee and move on.
Well, now, you don't sound friendly at all. Where are you headed, Denver?
That's right.
That is gonna be a long walk.
We don't plan on walking.
Well, you're gonna have to. Because we're taking your horses, and we're not leaving ours either. With that many spare mounts, we can outdistance that posse without any trouble. Now, you and Arturo there can either hoof it, or you can stay right here permanent-like.
Kingston started to move his hand toward the butt of his gun.
The choice is...
Conrad shot him in the face. As the leader of the group fell lifeless to the ground, the other man grabbed for his gun. Conrad squeezed the trigger and drilled a bullet into the man's chest. The third man struggled to control the horses as they began to spook from the shooting. Conrad levered the Winchester again and swung the barrel toward him.
Give it up! Go to hell!
The last outlaw clawed at the gun on his hip. Conrad and Arturo fired at the same time. The bullets ripped through the man's body and spun him around. He fell to the ground, face first. Without anyone holding their reins, The thoroughly panicked horses belonging to the outlaws bolted off into the darkness with their reins trailing. Conrad watched them go and smiled faintly. Slowly, he lowered the rifle. The air was thick with the smell of powder smoke and death. He knew he ought to be used to it, but he wasn't sure he ever would be.
They must have stolen those mounts pretty recently. Otherwise, they would have been used to the sound of gunfire by now.
Excuse me, sir. I think I am going to be sick.
Go ahead.
Arturo stumbled away from the campsite. There had been a time when the sudden outbreak of bloody violence would have affected Conrad that way, too. Maybe he was getting used to the killing after all. He levered another round into the rifle's chamber and checked to make sure the three men sprawled on the ground were dead. He was pretty sure they were, but it took only a minute to confirm. Arturo came back, looking pale and shaken. He wiped the back of a hand across his mouth.
My apologies, sir.
No apologies necessary. You handled yourself very well.
I've learned by observation, and I have had a good teacher.
He gestured at the corpses.
I take it these men were desperados?
One of them said something about a posse being after them, so yeah, it's a good bet. I'll check their clothes and see if I can find anything that'll tell us their names.
It was an unpleasant chore, and an unproductive one as well. He didn't find anything in the pockets of the men except some greasy folded greenbacks, a few coins, matches, and cigarette makings, a tattered deck of cards, and a poker chip.
If they had any loot from their crimes, it must have been in their saddlebags.
Conrad straightened from the task.
Not much to show for a life of crime.
What do we do with him?
Conrad glanced at the stars.
It'll be light in another 3 hours or so. We'll bury them then. In the meantime, let's drag the bodies over there in those tall weeds. I don't want to spend the rest of the night looking at them.
When that was done, Conrad told Arturo to go back to his bedroll and try to get some sleep, as he'd been trying to do when the three strangers rode up.
I'm not sure I'd be able to sleep after that.
Try anyway. I'll finish out the night on watch.
Well, all right. But if you need me, don't hesitate to wake me.
I won't.
Despite what Arturo had said, within minutes, he had dozed off. Conrad sat down on the cottonwood log again and tried not to think too much about what had just happened. If he allowed himself to brood about every act of senseless, wanton violence that had intruded itself into his life over the past couple of years, he wouldn't have time for anything else. And he would probably go mad. Conrad let Arturo sleep until the sky was gray with the approach of dawn. He built up the fire and put fresh coffee on to boil, then took bacon from their supplies in the back of the buckboard and got it sizzling in a pan. When the bacon finished frying, he would use the grease to cook up some flapjacks. The good smells woke Arturo.
Well, I would have prepared breakfast, sir.
I know that. But I cooked for myself for a long time when I was out on the lonely trails. I don't mind.
Arturo sat up and rubbed the sleep out of his eyes.
I must say, having seen you in the midst of glittering high society, it's difficult to believe that you also spent so much time living
some sort of owl hoot?
You know, basically, yes.
There's something to be said for solitude. Seemed like every time I got around people too much, I wound up in some sort of scrape. Usually a shooting scrape.
Ah, then what you are saying is, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
That pretty much sums it up. Whether I'm Conrad Browning or Kid Morgan, people are all the time shooting at me.
Arturo looked toward the weeds where they had put the bodies of the dead outlaws.
Indeed.
We'll have breakfast first, and we'll take care of that little chore.
Yes, of course. I wouldn't want to dig graves on an empty stomach, would we?
Arturo climbed to his feet and went over to the fire.
Why don't you let me finish that? You are more skilled at tending to the horses.
Sure.
Conrad tried not to chuckle. Sometimes he wondered who exactly was in charge, him or his so-called servant. The horses had plenty of graze to graze on, so Conrad took them over to the creek one by one and let them drink. While he was doing that, Arturo finished preparing breakfast. The smell of coffee and bacon made Conrad forget that he was a little tired. They would push on toward Denver, once they had finished the burying. He had been to that city that lay in the shadow of the Rocky Mountains many times. Denver was a big place. If Pamela had hidden the twins there, finding them wasn't going to be easy. So far in the quest, Conrad had been able to uncover enough clues to keep him on the trail. More than once, he'd had a feeling Pamela had left those clues on purpose. She had wanted him to keep searching. She had realized how much torment he would be in, knowing that his children were out there, somewhere. As Arturo poured the coffee, Conrad walked back to the camp. He handed a cup to Conrad, then knelt by the fire to dish up the bacon and flapjacks. The sun was barely peeking over the horizon. With a sudden thunder of hoofbeats, a large group of riders surged out of the reddish-gold glare and galloped up to the camp. Conrad hadn't strapped on his Colt yet. The coiled gun belt and holster lay on the ground next to his bedroll. His Winchester leaned against the cottonwood log, nearby, but not within fast reach. All he had in his hand was a cup of coffee. He grimaced as the riders reined in, and the cloud of dust raised by their horses' hooves drifted over the camp.
You fellas are in too big a hurry. You got dust in our breakfast.
Since the sun was behind them, the riders were mostly in silhouette. Conrad could tell they were looking for trouble. They carried their rifles across the saddles in front of them. Since he couldn't very well shoot it out with them, he would have to rely on talk instead.
Who are you two?
I could ask the same of you. After all, this is our camp and you're the visitors, or intruders might be a better word.
Don't get smart with me, boy. I'm Sheriff Lucas Pevner, and I'm on the trail of three no-good bastards who robbed the bank in Stillwater.
Conrad turned and gestured casually with the tin cup in his hand toward the tall weeds.
The men you're looking for are right over there, Sheriff.
Pevner moved his horse so he blocked out the rising sun. He was that big. Conrad could see the lawman's rough-hewn face with a drooping white mustache.
What in blazes are you talking about?
Pevner turned his head.
Danny, check it out.
One of the posse members urged his horse forward. He rode over to the weeds and reached down with his rifle, using the barrel to push some of the growth aside.
Son of a... They're here all right, Sheriff. Looks like all three of them.
Dead?
Dead as they can be.
Danny turned around with a disgusted look on his face.
Ugh, the ants are getting to them.
Pevner glared at Conrad.
What happened here?
They rode in a few hours ago and tried to steal our horses. We didn't let them.
You didn't let them? Do you know who those hombres are? I mean, were?
One of them was called Kingston. That's all I remember.
Bully Kingston, they called him. Killed at least four men that we know of. The other two were almost as bad. And you're claiming the dude like you and this skinny drink of water shot it out with him and killed all three of them?
We didn't want them to take our horses.
Oh. All right, Danny, you and some of the boys drag them out and wrap them up in blankets. We'll take them back to Stillwater with us.
We might not want to do that, Sheriff. It's going to be a mighty hot day, and like I said, the ants are already starting to get to them.
Yeah, you're right. We'll plant the bastards right here.
Pevner looked around at the creek and its grassy, tree-lined banks.
It's a prettier place for eternal rest than the varmints deserve, that's for dang sure.
We're obliged to you, Sheriff. Arturo and I were going to bury them, but you and your men can save us the trouble.
Pevner swung down from the saddle.
Who are you, mister?
My name is Conrad Browning. This is my friend, Arturo Vincenzo.
Pevner glanced at Arturo.
A foreigner, eh?
He turned back to Conrad.
What are you doing out here, Browning?
We're on our way to Denver.
Well, you said Kingston and his men wanted to swap horses with you. What happened to their mounts?
They spooked and ran off when the shooting started. That's the last we saw of them. They probably didn't go very far. You can probably find them if you want to look.
Pevner nodded and looked over his shoulder.
Danny, see if they got the bank loot on them.
I can save your deputy the trouble, Sheriff. I searched them already. The money they took from the bank must be on their horses, because they don't have it.
Well, is that so? It wouldn't be that you already found the loot and claimed it for yourself, would it?
Conrad waved a hand at the buckboard.
There's all our gear. You're welcome to go through it if you want. I can tell you right now, though, that you'll find some cash. That's our traveling fund.
Well, how much cash?
A couple $1,000.
Kingston and them took $8,000 from the bank. Maybe you done already stashed the rest of it and just kept out a couple grand.
Why don't you send some of your men to look for those horses first, Sheriff, before you go around accusing somebody who's actually done you a favor?
Pevner glared at him a moment longer before jerking his head in a curt nod.
All right. Did you see which way they went when they stampeded?
North.
Phillips, Martin, Webster, go take a look and see if you can find them horses.
While they're doing that, Arturo and I are going to have our breakfast.
Conrad looked at the coffee in his cup and made a face at the skim of dust floating on its surface.
That is, if it's still fit to eat.
He didn't offer to share their food with the posse. He and Arturo were running a little low on supplies, and what they had would have to last until they reached Denver. Besides, Pevner's attitude rubbed Conrad the wrong way. He could understand why Frank had told him that a lot of lawmen were full of themselves and hard to get along with. A couple of posse members had brought along shovels. It was a smart thing to do when chasing outlaws. Chances were somebody would usually need burying before the pursuit was over.
All right, the rest of you start digging, but not too close to the creek.
When Conrad and Arturo finished breakfast, Conrad started to hitch the team to the buckboard while Arturo cleaned up. Pevner came over to the vehicle, still glaring.
Where the hell do you think you're going?
I told you, Denver.
Not yet, you ain't. Not until we account for that missing bank money.
You searched our belongings while we were eating. You should be satisfied by now that we don't have it.
You're staying right here till my boys get back with them horses, and then we'll just see what happens.
Conrad's jaw tightened. He expected the three men Pevner had sent to look for the outlaw's horses to be back soon. It was easier to wait for that than to argue, but it didn't mean he had to like it.
Fine. For the time being.
Conrad walked over to his bedroll. He reached down toward the coiled gun belt, intending to strap it on.
Don't do that. You step away from that gun, Brownie.
Conrad turned toward him, struggling to control his anger.
Sheriff,
The fellas are coming back. Looks like they got those horses with them.
It was true. The three posse members were riding in from the north, leading the three horses the outlaws had ridden in on the night before. As they came up, Conrad saw that the saddlebags on each animal appeared to be well stuffed. Eagerly, Pevner opened one of the pouches and stuck his hand in it. He had a thick wad of bills clutched in his fingers when he brought them out.
Well, looks like the loot's here, all right. Danny, get it all out and count it.
Pevner cast a hard glance toward Conrad.
If there's $6,000, we'll know that somebody was lying to us and had already collected his share.
You said three men robbed the bank, Sheriff. There are three graves over there.
Yeah, well, maybe you was the mastermind behind the whole thing, mister.
Conrad bit back the angry words that wanted to spring to his lips. It would all be over soon, he told himself. It didn't take Danny long to count the money he pulled from the saddlebags.
$8,167. I reckon that matches up with what Mr. Madison at the bank told us those fellows got away with, Sheriff.
You're right, Danny.
He turned and stuck out a big paw toward Conrad.
Well, no offense, Brownie. I reckon you're in the clear.
Conrad wasn't that eager to accept his implied apology, but he shook hands anyway. He supposed the sheriff had only been doing his job.
You'll finish burying them?
We sure will.
Then Arturo and I will be on our way as soon as we're ready to travel.
Well, that's fine. Headed for Denver, you say?
That's right.
You ought to be there in another couple of days, unless you run into somebody else who wants to shoot you.
I wouldn't rule it out.
No one tried to kill them, despite Arturo's veiled prediction, and they made better time than Pevner had said. It was late in the afternoon of the next day when they reached what folks had started to call the Mile High City. The Front Range of the Rockies lay 10 miles west of Denver, but because of the thin, clear air, the mountains appeared to be close enough to reach out and touch.
Ah, it is a spectacular sight.
Arturo and Conrad entered the city.
Denver's a pretty place, all right.
Conrad rode the blaze-faced black alongside the vehicle.
I want to go see my lawyers first. Their office is on Colfax Avenue, not far from the Capitol.
Do you have attorneys on retainer in all the large cities, sir?
Just about. It takes a lot of paperwork to keep all those business enterprises going, and I sure as hell don't want to do it.
He wore a black coat to go along with the black trousers and had a string tie cinched around his neck. Silver conchos studded the hatband of his black Stetson. He looked like a successful rancher, or possibly a gambler or gunman. They passed the federal building, the state capitol, and the U.S. Mint. All of them were impressive structures. So was the 6-story brick office building where Conrad's lawyers were headquartered. Arturo parked the buckboard in front of the building.
I'll wait out here and keep an eye on our supplies, sir.
That's a good idea. Denver's gotten to be a big enough town that you can't trust people like you can in a little settlement.
The building didn't have a hitch rail for saddle horses in front of it. Most people traveled around town in buggies or carriages these days. Conrad dismounted and looped the black's reins around the brake lever on the buckboard. That would work well enough. When he reached the second floor, Conrad came to a heavy wooden door with pebbled glass in its upper half. Painted on the glass in gold letters were the words Hudson, Burke, and Hardy, attorneys at law. He turned the gold-plated knob and stepped into an expensively appointed outer office with a gleaming wooden floor. The woman behind the desk was putting a cover over her typewriter. She looked up at him.
I'm sorry, sir, but we're about to close for the day.
Conrad took his hat off and smiled.
It's I who should apologize for coming in so late, Miss...
Sullivan.
Miss Sullivan.
Conrad didn't recognize her from his previous visits and knew she probably had been hired since the last time he was there. She was very attractive, probably about 25, with honey blonde hair pulled up on top of her head.
I need to speak to Mr. Hudson if he's here, please.
Ellery Hudson was the senior partner in the firm and the one with whom Conrad had dealt most often.
Well, I'm afraid that's impossible without an appointment. If you'd care to make one, Mr. Hudson has some time available at the end of next week.
This is important. I need to speak to him right away. Tell him it's Conrad Browning.
Carefully plucked blonde eyebrows rose in surprise. Obviously, Miss Sullivan recognized the name. She hesitated and then pressed a button on her desk.
Yes, Rose?
Conrad looked at the black box with interest. He knew it had to be one of the new inter-office speaking devices he had heard about. They were based on the same sort of apparatus as a telephone and were being installed in some of the offices back east. He hadn't expected to see one in Denver. But it would be a new century before too much longer, he reminded himself. Things changed. Progress, or what passed for progress, was inevitable. Rose Sullivan leaned forward and spoke into the box.
There's a man out here who insists on seeing Mr. Hudson, Mrs. Moorhead. He says his name is Conrad Browning.
Conrad smiled again. That was a name he knew. Julia Moorhead was Ellery Hudson's private secretary.
Ask him to wait right there.
Miss Sullivan looked up at Conrad.
If you'd care to wait a moment.
Of course.
Conrad hung his hat on a rack just inside the door, but didn't have a chance to sit down in one of the padded leather chairs before the door to the firm's inner sanctum opened and Julia Moorhead came out. She was a handsome, middle-aged woman who had been Hudson's private secretary for a number of years.
Mr. Browning, it is so nice to see you again.
You too, Mrs. Moorhead. Is Ellery here?
Yes, I told him you were here and he said to bring you right on back.
Julia glanced at Miss Sullivan's desk.
You can go on home, Rose.
I don't mind staying for a while. Someone might need something typed.
That won't be necessary. I can type anything that needs to be typed.
Oh, all right.
Julia motioned for Conrad to enter through the doorway.
This way, Mr. Browning.
Julia closed the door behind them and led him along a corridor lined with doors.
I apologize for that, Mr. Browning. Rose has something of a predatory nature.
Don't worry about it.
She paused.
I was so sorry to hear about what happened. I don't believe I ever met your wife, but I'm sure she was a wonderful woman.
She was.
We were all very upset when we heard that you'd been killed, too. It was such a relief to find out later that that report was incorrect.
Julia opened a set of double doors at the end of the hall.
Here he is, sir.
She stepped aside to let Conrad enter Ellery Hudson's private office. It was the largest office on the floor, with cross ventilation and an excellent view of the snow-capped mountains from one of the windows. Ellery Hudson came out from behind a big desk with his hand extended. He didn't look like one of the most prominent attorneys in the country. He was a short, somewhat pudgy man with wispy, fair hair. His eyes, behind rimless spectacles, were pale blue. His mild appearance concealed a keen legal mind and a nature that could be ruthless when called for.
It's good to see you again, Conrad.
The two men shook hands.
I'm terribly, terribly sorry for your loss.
Thank you, Ellery.
Conrad sat down in the plush leather chair in front of the desk, while Hudson resumed his seat behind it.
I'll leave you gentlemen alone.
Conrad lifted a hand to stop her.
No, please, stay.
He glanced at Hudson.
If that's all right with you, of course.
Whatever you prefer. I certainly have no secrets from Julia. She knows more about what goes on around here than I do.
And that's often a good thing.
Indeed.
Hudson clasped his hands together on the desk in front of him.
What can we do for you, Conrad?
First of all, I have a story to tell you.
Julia sat in a chair to the side while Hudson leaned forward. The two of them listened intently as Conrad explained everything that had happened during the past 2 years, starting with rebels' kidnapping and murder. Julia put her hand over her mouth to stifle a gasp of horror several times as he filled them in. When he reached the part about the twins and how Pamela had concealed their very existence from him, both of his listeners looked shocked and then angry. Conrad told them about his search for the children so far.
How could any woman use her own children as pawns in such a warped attempt at vengeance? I can't believe it!
Obviously, Pamela was capable of almost anything. Warped though it certainly is, Pamela's plan has been effective. She intended to torment me, and she succeeded.
And now your search has brought you to Denver. How can we help you, Conrad?
My hunch is that Pamela probably stayed either in one of the best hotels in town or with friends. I need to find someone who remembers when she was here and whether or not she had children with her.
Because if she didn't...
Then I've come too far and overlooked the place where she left them. But if the twins were still with her, the hiding place is either here in Denver or somewhere farther west. She was booked through all the way to San Francisco on the train.
Yes, that makes sense. We have operatives who can investigate for us. It shouldn't take long to blanket all the best hotels in the city and find out what you need to know. A few days, perhaps.
That's what I was hoping you'd say, Ellery. I knew I could count on you.
We'll do everything we can. Discreetly, of course. That goes without saying.
Of course.
In the meantime, what are your plans?
I don't have any. Arturo and I have been on the trail for quite a while. I suppose we'll find a place to stay and rest while your men conduct their investigation.
I'll telephone the Lansing House and have them reserve their best suite for you.
That'll be fine. I'm obliged to you.
Conrad, have you thought about what you're going to do when you find the children, as I'm sure you will?
What do you mean? They're my children. I'll take them and make a home for them somewhere. I've been drifting for a while, but then it'll be time to settle down.
What if Miss Tarleton gave them to some family to adopt?
You mean...
I mean those people may have been raising the twins as their own for the past 3 years. They may not want to give them up.
But they're my children.
You might have to prove that. You might even have to go to court to claim them.
How can anybody prove such a thing? And who would go to court over it?
You never know. I'm just trying to make you aware of the possibilities.
You're right. And I appreciate your concern, Ellery. Right now, though, all I can think of is trying to find them.
I understand. When the time comes to deal with that, you'll have plenty of people on your side to help you.
They stood up, and Conrad shook hands again with Hudson. As he turned to go, Julia Moorhead took his hand as well.
I hope you find them, Mr. Browning. I'm sure you will.
Rose Sullivan was gone from the outer office when he went back through it on his way out of the building. Just as well, because his mind was whirling and he didn't need any added distractions. He had been concentrating so much on locating the children that he hadn't given much thought to what would happen after he found them. Hudson was right. It might not be as simple as he wished it could be. But a few more added problems wouldn't make him give up. Not by a long shot. He would figure out what needed to be done, and...
Mr. Browning! There you are.
He looked into the smiling, eager face of Rose Sullivan. Conrad nodded and touched a finger to the brim of his hat.
Hello again, Miss Sullivan.
Did you finish your business with Mr. Hudson?
Yes, I did.
I hope he was helpful.
Very.
He can be an old grump sometimes, but he's an excellent lawyer. You won't find any better in Denver.
I'm aware of that. I've known Ellery for quite a while.
I'm sorry. I know I should recognize your name, and it certainly sounds familiar. But I haven't really been working at Hudson, Burke & Hardy for that long, and...
That's quite all right, Miss Sullivan.
Why don't you call me Rose?
I really have to be going now.
She put out a hand, resting it on his forearm.
If there's ever anything I can do to be of service to you, I hope you won't hesitate to let me know, Mr. Browning. I try to keep up with everything that goes on at Hudson, Burke & Hardy, you know. Anything you tell me will be held in the strictest confidence.
I'll remember that.
He hoped she wasn't going to force him to be rude to get away from her.
I'm sure we'll be seeing each other again.
I'm sure.
He would have to visit Hudson's office again while he was in Denver, maybe quite a few times, so it wouldn't hurt to stay on friendly terms with the determined young woman who worked there. And she was certainly pleasing to look at, if nothing else. When he started across the sidewalk toward the buckboard, she let him go with a smile and a flutter of her fingers. Conrad returned the smile and waved at her. When he reached the buckboard, Arturo looked quizzically at him.
Who was that?
A young woman who works in Ellery Hudson's office. Hudson's going to lend us a hand in our search. He's also made arrangements for us to have a suite at the Lansing House.
Conrad untied the black's reins and swung up into the saddle.
I know where it is. Follow me.
The Lansing House was a small but extremely elegant and expensive hotel in downtown Denver. Not far from the famous Tabor Grand Opera House built by the tycoon Horace Tabor to impress his wife Elizabeth, better known as Baby Doe. Wealthy businessmen who valued privacy and discretion often stayed at the Lansing when they were visiting Denver, and more than $1 million deal had been arranged in the hushed confines of its comfortably appointed salon. Service at the Lansing was excellent as well.
Just park the buckboard in front of the hotel and leave it there, along with the bags and supplies.
Sir, I don't think...
Everything will be brought in and taken up to the suite. There's a livery stable in the next block that will take charge of the horses.
If you say so, sir.
When they finally made it inside, a doorman wearing a uniform as fancy as that of a Prussian archduke met them and ushered them through the lobby to the desk. Conrad had stayed there a few times before, and the doorman remembered him, calling him by name. So did the clerk.
No need for you to check in, Mr. Browning. Mr. Hudson called and said that you were to have the suite we keep reserved for his firm's clients.
Thanks. This is my friend and business associate, Mr. Vincenzo.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Vincenzo. If there's anything we can do to make your stay in Denver more pleasant, please let us know.
Of course. Thank you.
After taking the elevator to their room on the third floor, a bellboy ushered them in.
Here you are, gentlemen. It has two bedrooms, a luxurious sitting room, and indoor plumbing. I hope you enjoy your stay.
Thank you.
The bellboy left the room and closed the door behind him.
You didn't tell them I was your servant.
Conrad shrugged and tossed his hat onto a desk.
Didn't seem to be any need to. We're partners, Arturo. We've been through too much together to worry about such things.
Well, I see. Does this mean you are no longer going to pay me?
No, that's not what it means. I'm just not going to worry about a bunch of meaningless protocol and phony manners.
You are very different from Count Fortunato, sir.
I should hope so. Nobility or not, Fortunato was a crazy, evil son of a bitch.
You get no argument from me, sir.
Conrad changed into a brown tweed suit, also donning a silk cravat and a diamond stick pin, before they went back downstairs to have supper. The food in the dining room of the Lansing House was as good as any to be found east of San Francisco, and Conrad enjoyed the dinner they ate that evening. After the meal, he lingered over a snifter of brandy.
Do you have any plans for this evening, Arturo?
Plans? Why would I have any plans? I have never been here before.
Well, I have. Come on, I'll show you some of Denver's nightlife.
Are you sure that is a wise idea, sir?
We don't have anything else to do while we wait for Ellery to carry out his investigation. Denver's too big for us to wander around the town asking folks at random if they remember seeing Pamela and the twins.
You have a point there. Where are we going?
A place called the Palace.
This so-called palace isn't a house of ill repute, is it?
Hardly.
They left the hotel and walked a few blocks northeast to the corner of Blake and 15th Streets, where an imposing two-story brick building sat, taking up almost an entire block. A big sign on the front of the building proclaimed it to be the Palace Variety Theater and Gambling Parlor. More signs, plastered up around the entrance, announced that famous vaudevillian Eddie Foy was scheduled to perform there the next week.
If we're still here, maybe we can take in a show. Tonight we'll just pay a visit to the gambling parlor.
I've never been very fond of gambling.
You don't have to bet on anything. I used to enjoy it, but somehow, it doesn't seem quite as exciting anymore.
When Conrad and Arturo entered the second floor gambling room, Conrad felt his pulse quicken a little from the familiar sounds of his youth. He had spent a lot of time in places just like this, including the palace. Those memories were still part of him. A huge gas chandelier hung from the ceiling in the center of the room and cast its light through hundreds of glass prisms over the various tables and gambling layouts. A long mahogany bar, polished to a high sheen, ran along one wall. Waitresses in elegant, low-cut gowns delivered drinks to the players engaged in the games. The room was crowded, and everyone seemed to be having a fine time.
Let's get a drink.
If you say so, sir.
Forget that sir business. Tonight, we're just a couple of pards out on the town.
Arturo cocked an eyebrow as if he found that a very unlikely proposition, but he didn't argue. They hadn't reached a bar when a man stepped in front of them to stop them. His waist was thickening, and his hair was thinning with middle age, but he was still a solidly built, impressive individual. A dark brown mustache curled on his upper lip. He had a cigar clamped between his teeth, but then he removed it.
Conrad? Conrad Browning, is that you?
Conrad grinned with the pleasure of recognizing an old friend.
Hello, Bat.
Conrad extended his hand, and Bat Masterson gripped it.
Good to see you again, son. I heard you were dead.
Not hardly.
How's your pa? I mean your father.
Frank was fine last I heard from him. He's still drifting, so we don't see each other very often.
Frank Morgan never could stay in one place for very long. We were alike in that respect, only he's even more fiddle-footed than I am. Did he ever tell you about the time he helped me track down some killers while I was still packing a badge in Kansas?
No, I don't think I've heard that story.
I'll tell you sometime. It's quite a yarn.
Masterson smiled at Arturo.
Who's your friend?
Arturo Vincenzo. Arturo, meet Bat Masterson.
The famous lawman.
Retired. Pleased to meet you, Mr. Vincenzo. Come on, you two, let's have a drink.
That's where we were headed.
As the three men walked toward the bar, he waved a hand to indicate their surroundings.
Do you still own this place, Bat?
No, I sold it several years ago. Got tired of arguing with the city fathers who seemed to believe it's some sort of den of iniquity. I moved down to Creed for a while and just came back to Denver a couple years ago. I was a little surprised to see the place still operating, but I come here when I can. Old time's sake, you know?
I bet it's still a good place to find a high-stakes game.
The best. In fact, there's a game coming up that might interest you. As I recall, you like to play some cards now and then.
I didn't come here to gamble, Bat. Things have changed.
Yeah, I heard you've had some bad luck. Some mighty bad luck. I'm sorry, son.
I'm obliged for that.
Well, if you change your mind, let me know. The buy-in to this game I'm talking about is pretty steep, but I'm sure you can afford it.
Masterson signaled the bartender and ordered three cognacs for them. The drinks had just come, and Conrad was picking up his snifter when someone jostled him heavily from behind. About half the cognac splashed across the bar. Instinct made Conrad swing around angrily. He was about to tell the man who had bumped into him to be more careful when he saw a gun barrel rising toward his face and heard the weapon's hammer being drawn back. Conrad's left hand flashed up and closed around the gun barrel. He wrenched upward on it, at the same time his right fist smashed into the face of the man who was trying to shoot him. The man's head rocked back from the force of Conrad's punch and fell to the floor. With the attacker down, Conrad noticed that he wore a black Stetson and black Western cut suit, and his deeply tanned face was rough-hewn under graying hair. Several men wearing range clothes surged forward from the crowd, probably friends of the man who had attacked Conrad. The situation might have gotten uglier if Bat Masterson hadn't stepped in just then. He had a pistol held rock steady in his hand.
That's far enough, gents. Rance got himself into this trouble. It's his lookout, not yours.
Damn it, Bat. He's our boss. We've got to back his play.
Come ahead, if it's worth a bullet to you.
The games had all come to an abrupt halt. Every eye in the place was on the confrontation at the bar. The man who had started the trouble was still rubbing his neck, but he had caught his breath and was able to talk.
Back off, boys. You don't want to go up against Masterson.
He can't kill us all, boss.
Are you willing to bet your own life on that, friend?
Damn it, I told you to take it easy. Get on out of here. Find some friendlier place to drink and play some cards.
You're the one who tried to shoot me, mister. If anybody made this place unfriendly, it was you.
I wasn't going to shoot you. Just teach you to have a mite of respect for your elders and betters.
You're older than me, anyway.
Conrad was still holding Rance's gun by the barrel. Flipping it around, he caught it easily by the butt and opened the cylinder. He tilted the gun up and turned the cylinder so the bullet slid out and fell to the floor. Rance's face darkened with anger, but he held his temper. Conrad put the empty gun on the bar.
Why don't you come back and get your gun later, Rance? They'll hold it for you here.
And I'm no shootist like you, Masterson. Never claimed to be. There'll come a day when someone takes you down a notch.
Rance glared at Conrad.
You and this fancy pants kid both.
With that, Rance turned around and stalked out of the palace's gambling room. His men followed him down the stairs, but not without casting some mighty hostile glares toward Conrad and Masterson first. Masterson didn't lower his gun until they were all gone and a buzz of sound had begun to grow in the room again. Then he reached behind his back and slid the pistol into a holster he wore under the tails of his coat.
That was a near thing. Rance McKinney isn't a good man to cross, and his men are almost as loco as he is, or can be. He's not always quite so proddy.
Friend of yours?
Not so's you'd notice, but we're civil enough to play a little poker together from time to time. Rance fancies himself pretty good at it.
Is he?
That depends on who he's playing against.
What was the idea of pulling a gun on me? He's the one who ran into me and spilled my drink.
He's a high-handed son of a gun. He probably meant it when he said he was going to teach you a lesson. Just turning around to challenge him when he bumped into you like he did was enough to set him off.
He's lucky somebody hasn't shot him before now.
Rance owns one of the biggest spreads in Colorado, and he's always got that crew of curly wolves with him. People tend to step well away from him when he comes around.
I don't remember him from the last time I was here.
He moved into the area about 5 years ago. Bought the old Double Star Ranch from Milt Tompkins and started gobbling up all the range around it.
Conrad shook his head. 5 years earlier, he hadn't had much interest in ranching, so he didn't remember the spread Masterson mentioned. It didn't matter. McKinney was gone, and Conrad didn't intend to have anything more to do with him. He turned back to the bar and found that the bartender had mopped up the spilled cognac and replaced the drink with a fresh one.
Thanks. I'm sorry about the disturbance.
Oh, wasn't your fault, sir. Anyway, it doesn't take long for things to get back to normal in here.
That was true. The mood in the palace was as jovial and high-spirited as it had been when Conrad and Arturo went in a short time earlier. No blood had been spilled, so the patrons had gone back to having fun. Conrad sipped his cognac and looked at Arturo.
What do you think of the place?
I think that wherever you go, trouble seems to follow you there.
Yeah, he really is a chip off the old block.
Despite Arturo's comment, no more trouble broke out while they were at the palace. Conrad enjoyed catching up on old times with Masterson.
I believe it is time to go. It was great talking with you again, Bat.
Same here, Conrad. But let me know if you change your mind about that high-stakes game. You can find me in here, or one of the other usual places.
The next day, Conrad paid another visit to Ellery Hudson's office. He knew it was probably much too early to expect any results from Hudson's investigation, but he couldn't sit around the suite at the Lansing House doing nothing. Rose Sullivan smiled brightly as Conrad came into the outer office. The place was busy. The door behind Rose's desk was open, so he could look along the hall and see lawyers and clerks passing back and forth as they went about their work.
Hello, Mr. Browning. Mr. Hudson told me to tell you, if you came in, that he's in the law library.
He wants to see me?
I think so.
Rose got to her feet. She wore a pale blue blouse over a black skirt and looked as lovely as she had the day before. Her blue eyes were just as bold, too.
I'll show you.
I can find it.
No, I wouldn't hear of it. I'll escort you so you won't get lost.
She came around the desk and took his arm. He was too much of a gentleman to pull away from her, letting her link arms and steer him back out the pebbled glass door into the outer corridor. He was sure it was no coincidence that the soft warmth of her breast pressed against his arm as they walked around a corner to another door. It had pebbled glass in the upper half too, but no writing on it. Rose opened the door and led him into a hallway. A door off that hall led into the vast, high-ceilinged law library. The smell of fine paper and rich leather bindings would have been pretty heady stuff to a bibliophile, Conrad thought. Ellery Hudson stood in front of one of the tall bookcases that lined the walls. He had just slid a thick volume back into place and was reaching for another one when Conrad and Rose went in. He looked over his shoulder.
Ah, there you are, Conrad. I was going to telephone you at the Lansing if you didn't come in.
He nodded to Rose.
Thank you, Miss Sullivan. That'll be all.
She let go of Conrad's arm with obvious reluctance. She lingered as long as she could without annoying Hudson. Hudson waited until she was gone and the door had closed behind her.
I'm sorry, Conrad. Our Miss Sullivan appears to be something of a fortune hunter. I didn't know that about her. She's dealt with many well-to-do clients before without acting like that. But perhaps not many who have youth and good looks to go along with their money.
I'm not here to talk about my money or good looks. I was just curious to know if you'd found out anything yet.
Not really. However, I mentioned to Violet that you were in town, and she suggested that you come to dinner at our house tonight.
Violet was Hudson's wife. Conrad had met her a few times and thought she was a nice enough woman, but he didn't relish the idea of spending the evening with the Hudsons.
Ellery, I don't know.
Of course, when I say dinner, I may be understating the case a bit. There'll be 50 or 60 people there.
The idea of attending a party at the Hudson Mansion was even less appealing. Back in Boston, Conrad had ventured into the high society circles he used to frequent, but that had been to help him find out more information about Pamela and her activities. Of course, the same tactic might work here, he realized. Pamela had friends in Denver from the time of her engagement to him, and she might have visited some of them when she came through the Mile High City 3 years earlier. Conrad hadn't considered that possibility before.
I thought that someone who's there might be able to tell us something about Pamela.
Great minds work alike, as the old saying goes, Ellery. The same thought just occurred to me.
So you'll come?
I will. What time?
8 o'clock. I'll send a buggy for you. There's just one thing. Violet won't like it if there's an odd number of guests. We'll have to come up with someone to accompany you.
And by someone, you mean a lady?
Of course. Violet's a great one for pairing everyone up. The problem is, I can't think of anyone who'd really be suitable right now.
Maybe I can.
You want me to go with you to a dinner party at Mr. Hudson's house?
Hudson stood in front of Rose's desk with Conrad.
This was Mr. Browning's idea, not mine.
I think it'll be fine, Ellery. Will any of your guests actually know Rose that well?
I'm sure some of them have seen her here in the office. But if she wore her hair down, say, and was in an evening gown rather than business attire, we could tell people that she's Violet's niece or cousin, something like that, visiting from back east.
You want me to pretend to be somebody I'm not?
Just for this evening. And it would be very helpful to me.
Well, is this part of my work, Mr. Hudson?
Of course, I can't order you to do it. But it would be a favor to us, and Mr. Browning and I would appreciate it.
Then certainly I'll do it.
Rose got to her feet.
And I won't disappoint you, Mr. Browning. But I don't have a gown that would be all right for something like that.
Julia can help you. The two of you can go out and buy whatever you need. Have the bill sent here to the firm.
That would be wonderful. I'll go tell Mrs. Moorhead right now.
As she bustled down the hall, Hudson looked over at Conrad.
Are you sure about this?
It'll be fine, Ellery. And it'll be an evening Rose never forgets.
Conrad went back to the Lansing house and told Arturo about the plan.
I'll see to it that your best suit is cleaned and pressed, sir. And if I may be so bold, perhaps you should pay a visit to the barber.
Getting a little shaggy, am I? All right, I'll do that.
Conrad spent the rest of the day getting ready for the dinner party. In his mind, he went over the people he knew who were important figures in Denver's society circles, trying to remember if any of them had been particularly close to Pamela. He thought of several people he definitely wanted to talk to that evening. Even if they weren't close, Pamela might have gotten in touch with them when she passed through Denver 3 years earlier. By the time the buggy picked him up at the hotel shortly before 8 o'clock that evening, he didn't look anything at all like Kid Morgan anymore. Elegantly dressed, carefully barbered, smelling a little of bay rum, he carried himself with the casual arrogance of the very wealthy. The people he would be seeing at the party would expect that of him. But in the back of his mind, Conrad unexpectedly found himself thinking that he would have been happier in some lonely trail camp, far from civilization, drinking Arbuckles and eating bacon and beans next to a campfire. He couldn't help but wonder if the kid was now the real person, and Conrad Browning only a pose. He put that thought out of his head. Conrad Browning was the father of those two children, so Conrad Browning he would be. The buggy's driver was a burly, middle-aged black man.
Good evening, Mr. Browning.
Good evening. We'll need to pick up Miss Sullivan.
Oh, blast it. I don't know where she lives.
Oh, Mr. Hudson provided me with her address, sir. Now that's where we're going next.
Excellent. Ellery usually thinks of everything. I suppose that's what makes him such a good lawyer.
Yes, sir.
The driver sent the buggy rolling over Denver's cobblestone streets and pulled up a short time later in front of a boarding house.
Is this it?
Yes, sir. Miss Sullivan should be ready. Would you like me to fetch her?
Conrad stepped down from the buggy.
No, I'll get her. I'm her escort for the evening, after all.
He went up the walk to the boarding house's porch. The building was a gabled, three-story Victorian and appeared to be fairly new. It even had a bell push next to the front door instead of a knocker. Modern progress was everywhere in Denver. A middle-aged woman answered the door.
Oh, my goodness. You must be Mr. Browning. Rose has told me all about you.
She stepped back.
Please come in. I'm Mrs. Sherman, her landlady.
As Conrad went into the foyer, he took off the soft black hat he was wearing.
I'm very pleased to meet you. Is Rose ready?
I'm sure she is. I'll just go and let her know you're here.
Mrs. Sherman was about to start for the stairs when Rose appeared at the second floor landing. She started down the stairs, being careful in her descent. The long-sleeved, dark blue gown, hugged Rose's body closely enough to show it off to her advantage, and the square-cut neckline was low enough to reveal the start of the valley between her breasts. The glittering necklace she wore drew even more attention to that area. Fine white lace at the cuffs and neckline of the gown set off the dark blue color of the material. Her honey-blonde hair hung down around her shoulders with an attractive wave, now that it wasn't pulled up on her head in a more conservative arrangement. Conrad waited at the bottom of the stairs for her, and as she reached them, he held out a hand to her. She took it.
You look lovely, Miss Sullivan.
Under the circumstances, shouldn't you call me Rose, Mr. Browning?
All right. And I'm Conrad.
Of course, Conrad.
Shall we go?
Certainly. Just let me get my shawl.
Mrs. Sherman stepped forward holding a lace shawl.
It's right here, Rose. My, don't you and your gentleman friend look fine tonight. Just fine.
With Mrs. Sherman beaming and clasping her hands together in front of her, Conrad and Rose left the boarding house and walked out to the buggy. He linked his arms with hers as he did so. Might as well get used to acting like they were a real couple, he told himself. The driver didn't waste any time getting the buggy rolling briskly through the streets, and it wasn't long before they pulled up in front of the mansion that belonged to Ellery and Violet Hudson. It was similar to the boarding house where Rose lived, but it was built on a much larger and grander scale. If it had been daylight, Conrad might have been able to count all the gables, but he probably wouldn't have bothered. A flagstone driveway led through a large lawn dotted with shrubs, flower beds, and trees, and the brightly lit house made a pretty picture as the buggy approached. A number of other buggies and even some old-fashioned carriages were parked in front of the house, where the drive made a circle around a big flower bed. Guests were climbing out of some of those vehicles. When the driver brought the buggy to a halt, a liveried butler was there to help Conrad and Rose get out. Conrad hopped lithely from the buggy and motioned the man away, then turned back to take Rose's hand. She smiled in appreciation of his gallantry. Another servant was at the door to greet them and take Rose's shawl, which he turned over to a maid. The man led the two of them into a large, luxuriously appointed room where people with drinks in their hands were mingling. Laughter and talk filled the air, just like it would have in a saloon, but it was a much more subdued sound. Once again, Conrad was struck by how strange it all seemed to him. At one time in his life, he had spent many of his evenings in settings just like this one. It seemed like an entire lifetime ago, as if someone else besides him had lived through those experiences, and somehow the memories had intruded into his brain.